We'll hear argument now in the case of United States against Schunemann. Mr. Throppel.
Thank you, Chief Judge Easterbrook. May it please the Court, Counsel. I'm Brian Threlkeld with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, arguing on behalf of Mr. Schunemann. With respect to the restitution issue, the government acknowledges that counts 1 through 3 do not cover the losses from tax evasion in the years 2000 to 2002. The government attempts to capture those years as conduct encompassed in count 4, obstruction of internal revenue laws, but that the government's argument is not consistent with the record. The record is clear that the PSR identified the 2000 to 2002 tax losses as relevant conduct, not as offense conduct, and that the district court, in adopting the PSR and in sentencing Mr. Schunemann, reached the same conclusion. The year-by-year losses are set forth in tables in the PSR on pages 7 and 8. On page 7, the years 2003 to 2005 are identified as offense conduct for counts 1, 2, and 3, but not for count 4.
So of what importance is it? I see in paragraph 22 of the PSR, where they're discussing those earlier years that we're talking about here, they have a parenthetical relevant conduct, and then they set the table out. But it's very often the case that things that are within relevant conduct don't belong in restitution. Maybe sometimes they do, but I don't know why we should equate that to a statement of not restitution, since we do have count 4. I agree with you that if count 4 weren't there, then this would not be possible because restitution does operate differently from relevant conduct. But why wasn't the government injured by the conduct charged in count 4 to the tune of the extra $35,800 and some dollars?
Well, it's not clear that count 4 captures Mr. Schunemann's acts in 2000 to 2002 as offense conduct.
Okay. Why is that not clear?
Well, if you look at the table on count 8, now remember the table on count 7 identifies the tax years 2003 to 2005 as offense conduct under counts 1, 2, and 3, but not under count 4. The table on page 8 does not covers the years 2000 to 2002, but does not identify them as offense conduct for any counts.
So you were relying on the language in the indictment of count 4 from about May 2004 or before? You're just saying that can't stretch back to 2000?
I'm saying we can't determine that the jury's verdict on count 4 encompasses those years. Note that there's the disjunction, or before. Okay, now that, you know, perhaps the jury, the verdict reflects the a finding by the jury that that obstruction occurred at some point prior to May of 2004.
Well, of course, the jury's got the evidence that he buys this fraudulent scheme. When was it, 1999? He buys it.
I think so.
Pretty early. So the jury does have evidence that considerably before 2004.
I don't question that there is evidence there, but the issue is what conclusions can the court draw from the did the district court in sentencing Mr. Schuneman draw from the jury's verdict, and what conclusions can this court draw from the jury's verdict? All that the language of count four tells us is that, you know, apparently in 2004 to 2007, Mr. Schuneman obstructed Internal Revenue laws. It may also have reflected a conclusion that he did so at some point before then. We can't know that because the language is a disjunction, and so we don't know what the jury actually and the verdict form doesn't illuminate things any further. So we don't know what the jury found in finding him guilty of count four with respect to the years 2000 to 2002.
But the jury did have before it that between 01 and 05, no payroll checks were issued to him from his construction business. He wrote a total of $300,000-plus in checks to cash and designated those distributions to foreign trusts. And that was also argued by the prosecutor in closing argument about the three entities that had no real economic purpose other than to hide assets. That was argued, and that evidence was there before the jury.
The evidence was there.
And when the jury's given a couple of different ways of convicting, then as long as it's convicted under one of them, that's fine, right?
That means that the verdict is valid, yes, but it doesn't. Again, it doesn't tell us that that there was a finding that, again, the years 2000 to 2002, Mr. Schuneman's acts in those years were encompassed as offense conduct rather than relevant conduct. And it seems pretty clear from the record that the PSR characterized them as relevant conduct, not as offense conduct, and that the then chief district judge accepted the PSR, adopted the PSR, and was operating on the same understanding. That covers most of what I wanted to address on with regard to that issue. Now, with respect to the issue of the textual mistakes in counts 1 and 2, upon Mr. Schuneman's motions to dismiss, the district court had an obligation to determine whether each count could be proven.
Now, why isn't this too late to bring this up under Rule 12? This is the sort of thing that could be corrected. Rule 12 actually uses the term waiver, but then has a good cause provision. But however you want to phrase it, it really should have been brought up earlier, and unless it's a very serious error akin to plain error, we wouldn't look at it.
The defense should have brought it up. To be candid, everybody missed it.
You're the first one to find it, and had it been brought up in a timely manner, surely the government would have just gotten a superseding indictment that fixed it. I mean, it's very clear in the rest of the language of those counts which tax years are involved, right?
The language of counts 1 and 2, the text of counts 1 and 2, sets forth the essentially, it instructs the jury on what it has to find in order to reach a verdict.
How did the court's instructions present this to the jury?
The court said that in laying out the elements of the offense, it said that it must be shown that tax was owed on April 15th of the year following the year for which tax evasion was charged.
So that's correct, right?
That is correct. And the judge also said, I'm sending back with you the indictment, the text of the indictment, and that is to be your guide in determining whether whether the elements of the offense have been met. So again, through all of this, the only time this problem was even acknowledged was inadvertently when trial counsel for Mr. Schuneman repeated that the time or the rather the I think it was the April 15th, 2003 date with respect to count one, and he just missed, even as he was speaking it, he missed realizing, hold it, there's something wrong here. But in terms of whether this could have prejudiced Mr. Schuneman, what is troubling is the inference that the jury went back there, and we suppose that they're taking seriously the text of the indictment that they're to find Mr. Schuneman guilty on, and they didn't question it. They didn't say, come back to the judge and say, wait a minute, there's something funny here, we can't make sense of this.
It's kind of interesting, though, it didn't occur to any of the lawyers either, or the court. So, I mean, to put it on the jury,
well,
and the bottom line is the evidence was presented that supported mm-hmm. the correct time frame, and you knew the correct time frame, and everybody argued the correct time frame, pretty much.
But
at least the evidence was there to support the correct time frame.
And again, what is, I go back to my sense that what's troubling here is
and
that
see, troubling is not enough when it's a plain error standard.
The jury, who knows how attentive the jury was being to what it had to be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Trofield. Ms. Mullen.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. I'll start briefly with the clerical error in the indictment. As we set forth in our brief, it's our view that this issue's been waived. But I think that the Court focused on the proper inquiry here, and that is whether or not we should be troubled, whether or not the defendant was prejudiced by this. And if you look at the indictment and you look at the language in the indictment, it struck me as I was preparing that if we take out that first phrase, the incorrect phrase in counts one and two, the indictment would be fine without that phrase. That's unnecessary language. We would be left with in the Central District of Illinois, the defendant, Kurt Schuneman, did unlawfully and willfully evade and defeat his personal income tax due and owing to the United States for the 2003 calendar year, so we have the proper year, on taxable income of approximately $48,572. That is the proper amount, none of which was declared on an income tax return to the IRS for the 2003 tax year.
But it's confusing. I mean, I got as far as page 4 of the blue brief, and I was reading in the statement of the case, and I was scratching my head saying, huh? Early 2002 to April 15, 2003, tax evasion for 2003? I mean, what are we doing here? And then only later did I discover that was actually one of the issues in the case. I mean, the jury may have thought the same thing. Presumably they're law-abiding people who file their taxes every year.
It's definitely an unfortunate mistake, and it's a mistake that was not caught by the judge, by the parties, certainly the judge correctly instructed the jury during preliminary instructions and said this is about tax evasion in the years 2003, 2004, 2005. The defendant owed those taxes the following April 15th, following those years of tax evasion. The prosecutor focused on the correct years in his opening statement. The evidence spoke to the correct years and only those years. The prosecutor, again, focused on the correct years in closing argument, and that's how the jury was instructed in its final instructions. And it's important also to note that the defense here was never, there's some confusion about the dates, these are the wrong years. The defense was always, ask yourselves whether or not the defendant acted willfully, whether the defendant really would have taken on the IRS in this fashion. And so I think when we look at the record as a whole, there's really no reason to be troubled here. It's an unfortunate mistake. It's something that could have easily been corrected prior to trial had there been an objection to it. And this is the sort of situation, this is exactly why we require objections in these kinds of cases prior to trial, so that something as innocuous as this can be remedied.
So I would like you to turn to the other point, because I am concerned about this reference in the PSR to relevant conduct.
Mm-hmm.
And to the rule, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, that you don't order restitution just based on relevant conduct.
And
then intersecting that with the language of count four, how do we sweep in these early 3 years.
All right, so we understand that this $35,000 worth of tax loss for 2000, 2001, and 2002 cannot be linked to the tax evasion, the discrete tax evasion counts for 2003, 2004, and 2005. So the question becomes, in this plain error standard that we're in right now, whether that amount was caused by the conduct underlying count four. It cannot be linked to those other counts. We concede that. So as we're looking at this in this posture under a plain error standard, the way we process through this is, setting aside the fact that the PSR labeled this as relevant conduct, under a plain error standard, is this a valid restitution order? Is this something that can be linked to count four? And so then we look to the offense conduct under count four. We look to the evidence at trial. We look to the theory of the prosecution. And when you look at that, you see that this, for this count of obstructing and impeding, the offense conduct underlying that count clearly started in 1999, and that was the theory of the prosecution that was articulated from opening argument through closing, very specifically, that it was the purchase of this trust, the sham trust system, that enabled Mr. Schuneman to evade and impede the collection and the identification
of
his tax.
So your bottom line position is the probation officer just mislabeled it.
I think it's clear that the probation officer mislabeled it. And so then I think because we're under a plain error standard, had this been objected to, obviously it would have been litigated and the government would have set forth the position that this can be properly linked to count four as offense conduct, not as relevant conduct. But so now we're left with an absence of record on that. The district court judge did adopt the PSR, but it's important to note that the PSR doesn't just contain that language that this is relevant conduct. The PSR sets forth all of these facts as offense conduct in this case. The fact that this, again, this phony trust.
It's in the body of the.
It is in the.
What the probation officer included in outlining the offense.
The offense conduct. That's correct, Your Honor. So when we look at the offense conduct, we see that it starts with the defendant not filing taxes, I think, starting in 1997 or 1998. But this sham trust system, Larch Management, and then the two foreign trusts were purchased in the summer of 1999, and they were clearly purchased, as they were by 3,000 other individuals across the country, to evade taxes and to impede and obstruct the IRS from discovering the taxes. So what Mr. Schuneman did is that he filed tax returns under this phony limited liability corporation, Larch Management. Then he claimed in that tax return that he had transferred the money to the two foreign trusts and then never filed tax returns for those foreign trusts. So that was the theory from the beginning to the end, and that's why it's our view that the restitution order is a valid restitution order here, because that additional $35,000 represents the actual loss from the offense conduct in count four. If the court has no further questions, I'll return the balance of my time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.